welcome to True News. We're coming to you from Barcelona, Spain. This is our coverage of Mobile World Congress 2018, 5G. You're going to hear us talk a lot about 5G. 5G is the fifth generation of telephone service. And why this is so important is that 5G is necessary for the rollout of a vast array of new technologies that are converging. And what we have is a technological revolution. One speaker said today that technology revolutions have a lifespan of approximately 70 years. So think about this. You and I are witnessing the birth of a new technology revolution. They're calling it the fourth industrial revolution. And if this is so, add 70 years to 2018. That's how long it will take for this technological revolution to reach maturity and then be replaced by another technology revolution. So we're just at the very beginning of it, and it's going to change human society. It's going to change the way that we interact with each other, and even more importantly, it's going to change the way we interact with machines. The plan is, the goal is that every human on the planet will be connected 24/7 to 5G by the year 2030. And a vast portion of the planet will reach that stage by 2025. Here in the United States, we're going to see a rapid rollout of 5G in the early 2020s. In fact, AT&T announced today that I think 12 American cities will have 5G service by the end of this year, early 2019. Sprint announced 6 American cities will start to see what they called 5G-like service as early as April 2018, and full 5G service by the end of 2018, early 2019. So this thing is underway. And there were a lot of technology companies that made announcements today that their products were on the market. And so that means that they have been, the products that they were talking about years ago, they have now been developed. They've been brought to market. And one thing that I heard today was that 2017 was the year that the phone industry and other related technology companies finally standardized the specifications for 5G products. So once they got that together and they harmonized the specifications, then they could go to production. And that's what's happened. And so get ready. True News told you last year, 1 year ago, get ready for 5G. What we're telling you today is it is going to come really fast. You're going to be amazed how fast it's going to roll out in the United States and some other westernized countries. So I've got Paul Benson and Chase Anderson and Eric Rodriguez here. They've been attending sessions all day throughout the convention hall. There are over 110,000 people here from all over the world. And so we have finally regrouped back here, found a quiet spot, and we're going to relay to you what we heard today. And so this is my first time to hear from these guys what they heard in the educational sessions that they attended. One thing I want to bring up, and this was actually said yesterday, the CEO of Vodafone, which is a company in Great Britain, Vittorio Colao, he said that, now this was interesting, he said that 5G could help stop populism, all right, in Europe and the United States. Now listen to this, because he's talking about Brexit, he's talking about the political uprisings in Europe and the United States, and he said populism is fueled by anger among people because they think that they've been left behind and that government and corporations have not fulfilled their needs and given them what they want. That's not what causes populism. Populism is caused by an anger and frustration among the people that the global elite are making decisions without their input, that the global elite doesn't care what the people think, and they're going ahead with their agenda. But these guys here think that if they just, hey, if we give the peons 5G and they can get their movies faster, they're going to be happy. We give them more gadgets, they're going to be happy. They don't get it. They just don't get it. Now, he also talked about techno fear. I think, Chase, you were there yesterday brought that up, techno fear.
That was one of the keynotes, and that was one of the problems that he said that that the mobile industry needed to address. And what's interesting about that is I saw a poll today, and I think roughly 50% of people that were surveyed are fearful about technology companies, the amount of power they have, especially over data, as well as the way these technologies are affecting our future. So
it's not looking good for them.
No.
That poll showed that there's a lot of apprehension right. in the general public about where society's going, the technology. They feel that it's the lack of privacy, that technology's taking humanity someplace that we really shouldn't right. go.
And I think these tech companies know that fear is very real, and that explains their overt partnerships with people like the UN. They need to put a humanitarian wrapper around this technology and say, we're going to feed the poor, we're going to bank the unbanked, we're going to do things that we couldn't do before in a humanitarian way, and that's why we need this technology.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. When you put together what he said about populism, that is people who feel left out, and I'm saying, no, populism is caused by people feeling like you don't want us to participate in decision making. You want to make the decisions, the global elite. You just want to go ahead and change society. So several of us today, we attended a session about the cashless society. And they talked about the war on cash. That's their words, the war on cash. And let me tell you, folks, they were adamant that they are waging war on cash worldwide. They talked about cash as though it's an enemy that has to be defeated and buried. It was very militant, very aggressive mentality and vocabulary against cash. They want a cashless society. And so I just thought about, you know, what the gentleman from Vodafone said about populism, and then compare that to that session and go, well, this is what creates populism. You guys are sitting here talking about getting rid of cash worldwide in every country, and you wonder why people are getting upset. Right. But I was sitting there thinking, because one of the speakers on the panel was the CEO of a bank in Great Britain in London, and she was very anti-cash. She said she's been waging war on cash for many years. And I was sitting there thinking, well, this thing's going to come back and bite you, because when you get rid of cash, why do we need banks?
Right.
I mean, think about it. Am I going to carry digits down to the bank and say, I'd like to deposit these digits in your bank? I don't need them. So that lady, she's waging war on cash. She doesn't realize this thing's going to come back and bite her. And cryptocurrencies and blockchain is going to wage war on banks.
Or what was her answer to cash? What was she proposing to replace cash with in this session?
Digital currencies.
Digital currency in general.
Obviously, in their mind, digital currencies issued and controlled by central banks.
There you go.
All right. But we know where this is going. All right. It's going to, I mean, cryptocurrencies really, I think, is a populist response to the central banks.
Absolutely. And you know, they came to popularity the same time we saw this political revolution taking place around the world. So
people were looking for a way, how do I get my money out of this country?
Right.
Because they're closing the borders and making it difficult to move money from one country to another. So cryptocurrency becomes a way that you can take a thumb drive and leave the country and you've got your wealth on a thumb drive.
Right.
Sounds pretty cool.
And didn't you ask a question about cryptocurrencies during this?
I asked a question, and the question well, let's just say that it was radically rewritten, and then it was deleted off the list of questions. You could text your questions to them, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I asked a question about their war on cash, and it first appeared on screen in a radically different format, and then it just disappeared. My question was, how do the panelists justify their arrogant assumption that they have the right to abolish cash for 6 billion people around the planet? That didn't get asked.
No. Wow. And to your point on cryptocurrencies, the moderator brought up cryptocurrencies, but he said, we're not going to talk about that. So that told me, you know, these guys specialize in financial technology. We obviously see a breakout coming with cryptocurrencies. It happened all of last year and into this year.
Because they've been thinking they're going to control
the
digital currencies, and they didn't see cryptocurrencies coming up on them.
Rakuten, which I don't think any of us had heard of prior to today, but essentially they're an Amazon-like company that's really prominent in Japan, and they're actually making footholds across Europe now, it sounds like, as well. So anyway, they have about a $9 billion loyalty point program. And what they do as a company is they're connecting consumers with merchants, whereas Amazon's trying to eliminate these you know, retailers. They're just a middleman, and they're facilitating all this commerce in Japan and across the world. So anyway, they said they were going to roll over their loyalty card program into a cryptocurrency today. And this is just fascinating to me, because you have a company that's literally offering just about anything you could need to consume as a person, and now they're going to be offering a native currency to you, which you can purchase those items with.
Okay, so this would be like American Airlines announcing that they're converting their frequent flyer miles to a cryptocurrency.
Right.
So this company, Rakuten, in Japan, and I made some notes, Chase. He said that they're in Japan, number one in e-commerce. They're the number one Japanese online bank. They're the number one Japanese online travel agency. The number one Japanese credit card. The number one Japanese e-money card. The number one Japanese mobile payment system. They dominate Japan, and none of us have heard of Rakuten.
Right.
Now, in China, I know about
Alipay,
which is Alibaba, Jack Ma, and then the other big company is Tencent, which is huge in China. But I have never heard of Rakuten. And so he's kind of like the Jack Ma of Japan.
Yeah.
That was fascinating. And something I learned after that session, Walmart is going to sell online groceries in Japan and process it through Rakuten.
Wow.
But Rakuten is going to work in the United States with Walmart to take on Amazon.
We're seeing a convergence among technology companies. They're starting to make these partnerships that are even invading incumbent institutions like banking now. Rakuten is coming out with a currency, and others will follow suit, that essentially eliminate the need for traditional banking institutions.
Yes. Last year in Shanghai, there, and I don't remember his name, the CEO of a Japanese telecom, whatever the phone company is in Japan, and he announced in Shanghai that their company was no longer exclusively a phone company, that it was going to be a bank, a life insurance company, a health insurance company, that it was going to be a retailer, a credit card company. And so last year was the first time I saw that, okay, the telecoms are going to spread out, and because they're looking at it, it's like, hey, the customer has our phone and our service.
Yeah.
Why should we send them to Amazon and Google and all these other platforms? Why don't we just keep them inside our universe?
I remember that. I think they called it a life solution.
Is that what I was trying to remember? Life something.
You could even pay your, I don't know if you mentioned that, electricity bills.
Yes.
And it was all on one device, multiple apps. So they completely innovated their entire company.
Absolutely.
So you're seeing that a lot in, yeah. in Japan, Korea.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think the next 3 to 5 years, the landscape will be so radically different that it'll be like horse and buggy days versus cars and trucks. If you were living at the turn of the century, you know, it was so radical at that time. You know, and I'm going to tell a personal story. My granddad was a mule driver on the C&O Canal. Okay, so the C&O Canal was built in the, I guess, early 1800s to bring goods, agricultural goods, manufactured goods from the far western part of Maryland to Washington, D.C. All right, and so they dug a canal, and the boats came down the canal, and they had mules on the towpath, and the canal followed the Potomac River. So my granddad, as a young man, was a mule driver on the canal. But he lost his job. He lost his job because the C&O Canal went out of business. All right, he was, I don't know what age he was, but he was not old enough to drive the cars and trucks that had come out. Okay, you know what killed? You know what killed the canal? Trucks.
Wow.
Trucks. Like around 1900, 1905. That's what killed the canal. Trucks. And so what slowed down the transformation of transportation in America at the turn of the century was there were not enough men who knew how to drive trucks. They knew how to drive horses, okay? They could drive wagons. But they didn't have enough men who knew how to drive these new technological inventions called trucks. And my granddad was too young to qualify to drive a truck, and so he just lost his job. The canal shut down. The point I'm making is, that was a technological revolution. All right, that's what's taking place right now. Jobs are going to disappear overnight. Entire industries are going to disappear overnight. That's how fast this thing is coming. Go ahead.
I'll say too, I saw another point of view on the story, and that is I could see it integrating with the technosphere. There was a resistance to that new technology from going from the mule to the trucks.
Yes.
So, yes, there was jobs taken away, but there was also some form of resistance taking place there.
Absolutely.
With this new technology coming.
And so the new technology exploded with new jobs.
Yeah, it was supposed to make the jobs better, transportation easier, so on and so forth, new industries and all that kind of stuff. And that's also where we're at right now. We know all these companies are merging together. They're converging on this new technology. They're getting ready to roll out this mass new technology. And a lot of our listeners and watchers will message us saying, basically, they're fearful of what's to come because of it's so new and that resistance. And so it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen because the numbers that we're hearing by 2019, in 2023, they're telling us here there's going to be a mass adoption of IoT devices and 5G devices. Well, that's only a year away.
That's right.
It's only 5 years away. So I'm not for sure what the transition time was going from your granddad's mule, you know, riding the mule, driving the mule to a truck, what that time frame was. It'd be very interesting to know and see, hey, was it a 3 to 5 year period as well? That adoption took place and they finally embraced it, and that's when they're talking about these massive numbers exploding and that adoption will start happening.
Go ahead, Paul.
It's interesting you're talking about, you know, workers and industry. We just came out of a session called the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and GE's General Electric's chief innovation officer was talking about a peculiar thing that they noticed in their workers on the line. They said year after year, they would always see an increase in productivity, you know, rolling out technology, becoming smarter, how they're working. But recently, in just the last year or last 2 years, they noticed that productivity increase stopped. And for what reason, it wasn't clear. I could only speculate that what they're creating is becoming more and more complex. The environments are more and more demanding on the workers. So what did they do? They're now experimenting with implementing AR, augmented reality glasses, for the workers.
On the assembly line.
And they're already testing this now. So now the workers, as they're encountering problems, they actually get the manual is right there in their peripheral, and they can access it. If they need a specialist to chime in, they can view a video feed from somewhere else, maybe remote location, of what they're looking at and give them real-time feedback as to how to solve the problem. And they saw a 45% increase in productivity.
45%?
Yes. After, I mean, just that one thing. So that's an example of...
Okay, so if other industries know of that increase of productivity, you know what they're going to do. They're going to roll it out in every factory, every business, you know, in the country. Mm-hmm. Now, that brings me to what I heard a Google executive, Adrienne McAllister, and she said some amazing things about augmented reality, AR. And she said VR, virtual reality, VR can take you anywhere, but AR, augmented reality, can bring anything to you. That made sense to me. Then I understood, okay, now I can explain AR and VR. VR takes me someplace, but AR brings something to me. This is a Google technology executive. She said AR is, not maybe, AR, augmented reality, is the next big shift for mobile phones. AR, your mobile phone is going to become an AR device. And she said immersive computing is the future. Immersive. Yeah. What is? Who can explain immersive?
So I think they're probably talking about technology that they've invested in, a company called Magic Leap. So they just updated their website, I believe, 2 weeks ago. And in the intro to every one of these main events, you see these goggles. It's just for a second. It's these goggles where you're looking through them, and you can see different screens. You're interacting with your surroundings, and if you were walking, you would get advertisements. You could find information about the shops, specials that they're advertising. But even for working, I could see virtual screens. And it's just the possibilities are really endless.
Go ahead.
I would say, as you were describing it, what came to my mind was the movie Minority Report, mm-hmm. where Tom Cruise puts on glasses and he is driving what looks like he's like basically the air, but he's driving these different screens. And so what you're describing, that kind of, you know, that's what kind of put me, you know, an example for me was like what Tom Cruise did in Minority Report. Minority Report is becoming reality.
Yes. Yeah. Now, she showed a person wearing glasses, okay? And it's talking about the AR mobile phones. Mm-hmm. Now, these were not big goggles. No. They were very cool looking, like sunglasses. Like, you'd be glad to wear them. You'd be excited to wear them. You weren't going to look like, nerd walking around with these gigantic goggles. I mean, it was a sleek, slim, you know, sunglasses. And she said that will be your phone. That's what your phone's going to look like. Now, she also talked about a Google project. It's not out yet. VR 180, virtual reality 180. And she said, she didn't go into detail about it, but this is what I gathered from it. VR 180 is going to be recording you 24/7. And so 20 years from now, you want to relive your son's first step. And VR 180 will have recorded it, and now you watch it in virtual reality. You're there. You experience everything again. But in order for that to happen, Google's going to have to record your entire life.
Yeah.
Where is this going?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it up to that point.
Yeah.
The idea, you know, who's
turning it on and off?
Yeah, yeah. And also, who's going to pull out a DVD or a VHS or whatever and relive something? You know, having that experience to relive it as if you were there again, that would be awesome. I'd love to be able to go back and experience that, but at what cost?
Yes. All right, we're down to less than 2 minutes. Anybody have any key points that you want to bring up?
Nothing that you really missed, but to answer your question on immersive technology, I think what it's ultimately coming to is a point where our natural existence as humans and our interfacing with technology becomes so blurred in a sense that we don't know where our human life starts and stops and where technology begins. So it's just going to become a digital reality. I think that's where we're going to end up living.
I agree. Anybody else?
I wanted to mention a session I went to about 5G and how it was a discussion, a panel of the engineers. So there were Samsung and Nokia engineers, and they were talking about how, you know, what 5G is and kind of demystifying it. And they brought up one point I wanted to bring up. So they're talking about this network being open. So an open 5G network, meaning that for all of these Internet of Things devices, so we got hundreds of different devices, they have to be able to connect to the network, and it has to be kind of this free and open source area for this to happen. Like your home Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. right? What does it have? It has a password.
Right.
So I can't go over to your house and just get on your network. But now, you know, these networks have to be open for all of this.
The smarter the cities become, actually, the more vulnerable they are that somebody's going to hack everything in the city. Hey, that's it for today's edition of True News. Thank you for watching us. We're going to be here till Thursday. We leave Friday. And we will give you another report tomorrow on what is happening here at Mobile World Congress 2018, Barcelona, Spain. God bless. See you tomorrow.